From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. After the city of Portland, Oregon became the first test case of the limits to which Donald Trump is exercising his executive power, Chicago, Illinois appears to be the second test case. Mayor Lori Lightfoot has already denounced the idea of federal officers being deployed into her city. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is planning on sending at least 150 of its officers to Chicago to battle what Trump has claimed as rising violence amid anti-police protests. Chicago is a favorite target of right-wing media for its high levels of gun violence. And this week, 15 people were shot at in a drive-by shooting outside a funeral home. If Chicago needs help with violence, ostensibly gun violence would be the main issue, but it's not clear how armed federal officers would even address it. One organization in the city that has taken what it calls a hyper-local Kingian response to violence is the Institute for Nonviolence in Chicago. Chris Patterson is the Senior Director of Program and Policy there. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Thank you, Sonali. I appreciate it.
So first, what do you make of this idea of having federal officers enter your city? I am assuming you've seen how things have played out in Portland. Trump has claimed that the officers are doing a great job by locking a lot of people up. And anyway, they're all just anarchists in his words and people who hate our country. Those were his words. Now that Portland phenomenon is apparently arriving in Chicago.
Yeah. So I think in a lot of ways, unfortunately, this is a great season for opportunists and, you know, Trump being an opportunist and people who are, you know, constantly looking for a divide and conquer strategy as it pertains to violence prevention. But the reality is investments. These are things when I speak the language of investments and supporting communities, these are languages that people like Trump and others just don't understand. Right. So the reality is like on the ground, places like Chicago. You know, the communities are under siege and have been in epidemics for generations. Those federal dollars, local dollars are short and slow to come towards communities such as Austin, West Garfield Park, and Back of the Yards. So, you know, I'm not surprised by the rhetoric, but I do know that it's a trick that has been played, you know, for the American people over generations. You know, lock up people has been the answer, and it hasn't produced any fruit that is making communities safer, in fact.
The situation in Portland, Oregon has been cited as a test case, but officers there have been arresting people that they claim are violent criminals, yet when asked to produce evidence of violence, they're pointing out that it's basically protesters spray painting graffiti onto federal buildings or federal property. What have anti-police violence protests in Chicago looked like? Has there been anything that you would consider violence coming from the protests?
So overall, the overwhelming majority of protests that happened within the city of Chicago are mostly peaceful. There have been some instances where violence has occurred, but, you know, those happen on both ends of the spectrum, right? And so, you know, the reality is, like, I think it's, you know, for people who are speaking out against protests, they've wanted the excuse to kind of quiet the voices of those who are part of the First Amendment component. And I think this really is just red meat for people to figure out a way to silence all the voices that oppose whatever policies that are in place that are oppressing people of color. So in Chicago, the protests are peaceful, and we've had seen instances where it has turned violent. But overall, that is not the narrative that is actually happening on the ground.
And Chicago police are quite notorious for their violence, right? I mean, Chicago, setting aside instances of non-police officers engaging in gun violence, Chicago police officers have a history, a very serious and very disturbing history of flouting the law, of abusing suspects, and of course, of killing unarmed people, as many other police departments around the country have, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the protests are starting with this idea that it's about police brutality, right? And so what is happening in places like Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta is this blue flu, or this idea that if people object to the treatment that they're getting from law enforcement, then law enforcement in turns becomes frustrated with the people. You know, law enforcement is not in a position where it should be upset with protesters who are protesting a murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and others. But the reality is what happens when you stand up for your rights and you speak out, particularly if you're an African-American in this country, it is almost viewed as a violation of some unwritten code that you're not supposed to speak out against your oppressor. And the reality is like, you know, communities are facing a backlash. You know, law enforcement stops and arrests have gone down. And many, you know, they call it the blue flu, right? And so many instances where, you know, people have, law enforcement has just decided not to engage in law and order. And, you know, the reality is like, it's not working for communities in Chicago, particularly those that are African-American or brown communities.
So it's almost as the police are saying, if we can't abuse people, we don't want to do our job.
Yeah. And so that's the way it's perceived. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a lot of, you know, and it doesn't take away from a lot of the good officers who are working. But the reality is, you know, violence has been an epidemic that has been hitting communities of color by the hands of police, among other institutions. And, you know, the people are tired and are frustrated and are speaking out.
Let's talk about Chicago's gun violence. I mentioned that it is a favorite target for right-wing media, even though statistics show that it's not necessarily per capita the most violent city in the country. I mean, you certainly have cities like Baltimore and New Orleans and Memphis even that have higher numbers of homicide rates per capita, but Chicago is a favorite. Why? And how do you explain, first of all, why is it singled out compared to other cities, and why is there the level of violence that there is?
So it's hard to identify all the hidden agendas that are with the side of people speaking out against Chicago, but Chicago has, it's got some good, you know, obviously a lot of good things about it. And then it's got a terrible history of, you know, obviously gang violence, right? A lot of the organizations or street gangs that exist in America are birthed from places like Chicago, right? Crips and Bloods in LA, people in folks, gangs here in Chicago have spread across the country, you know, the Al Capone era, right? And so for a long time, Chicago has been viewed as a gangster city. The reality is one, it's not that case, right? Like a lot of people, the majority of people, 90%+, right, want to see safer communities. And a very small segment of people are actually driving the violence. But again, it's just red meat and it's opportunity for people to divide, right? What you don't hear is Trump saying, you know, when he was running for election, he told Black folks, what do we have to lose? Your schools are messed up. And, you know, all these other statistics that are true, in fact, for young Black men are unemployed at a higher rate. But the reality is he's done nothing as president to actually fix the root cause of any of the violence that's actually happening. And so when violence happens, you know, again, the playbook is suppress and oppress people. And again, it's just, you know, we're pushing our leadership to think outside the box and creatively about like, how do we bring African-Americans out of the, you know, the bottom of the barrel scenario that we've been in for generations.
Chicago is also often presented as evidence that gun control measures do not work. The NRA and other proponents of gun proliferation say Chicago has some of the strictest gun control laws in city level laws in the country, and look at all the gun violence there. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, well, he's just uninformed. And anyone who says it just doesn't know the dynamics on the ground that are happening in Chicago. The reality is we do have some of the hardest gun penalties in the nation. But what few people understand is that there aren't any gun shops in the city of Chicago. In fact, all those gun shops that are providing guns for people who are illegally obtaining them are coming from suburbs and or states that are allowing, that allow, right? So trafficking, you know, through their parking lots, sales that don't require necessarily licensing, Indiana, Memphis, you know, Wisconsin. And so it's not happening within the city of Chicago. So now how do you, like, what do the proponents say, the opponents say when someone says, like, there's no guns in the city, there's no gun shops in the city of Chicago, they're being brought in, right? And that's this an impossible scenario without other states kicking in and matching our efforts for as long as people can go into Indiana and arm themselves and then come across the border.
Let's talk about how your organization tackles this issue of violence. If President Trump is saying that he wants to tackle rising crime rates in cities around the country, that, by the way, all happen to be Democratic-run cities, what advice would you give him? What would you say your organization has been doing to address violence and that has been shown to work?
Yeah, one of the areas our organization works in is the Austin community. So Austin leads the city in shootings and homicides, unemployment, reentry from people coming back home from prison, right? And so a lot of ways, Austin is ground zero in Chicago. What we're doing is what we've seen from 2016 to 2019 is a more than 50% reduction in shootings. And how we did that is we combined street outreach, developing relationships with case managers, victim advocates. So what we did was we created a holistic wraparound service that we identified people who were at risk of either shooting someone or being shot, put as many hands on them as possible, meaning people who cared about them, case managers, outreach workers, and victim advocates. And then we poured resources onto them, meaning we help people get back into school. We help people with felony records get expungements. We help people get back into employment, right? And so when we talk about resources, this is the type of small investments that we're talking about. What's unfortunate is that when people and government has an opportunity to actually change the tide of violence in places like Chicago, it's interesting that doing the resource part that I just talked about is not even on the table as an option. The only option is often, let's lock them up, let's make them pay, right? And all they think about is a very violent scenario. So the reality is they're just matching violence with violence. And while it may not be the same level of violence that, you know, groups or guys on the streets are enacting on one another, it's still violence and all, because they won't almost insist on not dealing with the root cause of why violence is happening in the first place.
And of course, when people have made the call for the defunding of police, they have said that that money that gets poured into the police budgets really ought to be redirected into the resources of the kind that you were just mentioning. People need, people who are either victims of or survivors of violence or themselves caught up in gun violence, right? Or gang activity or poverty, etc.
Yeah. So one of the pieces that I think is important to talk about, it's just the idea that, one, the resources, right, they is, you know, some of the stuff that we just talked about, but the reallocation, right? And so defunding means a lot of different things to different people. And so I think, you know, when we're talking about reallocating funds, right, when we're looking at, in Chicago, more than $100 million that go towards overtime, and organizations such as ours simply have 10 staff who are working in a community of 100,000 people. So what we're asking for is, if you invested in community, which is proven through research to be an effective model at reducing violence, when you properly support that, but again, I don't want to get in lost in just defunding police, right? In Chicago, there's the TIF funds that never reach communities such as Austin, Inglewood, and Roseland. And so, you know, I think it's really just our elected officials and actually the voters to be educated around what they can push our electeds on. There's a lot of money that exists, you know, and while we're going through deficits and depressions coming up, there is money that actually exists so that we can address this in a real way. And I don't want to make law enforcement just a scapegoat. The reality is, like, if we're just depending on defunding police to get, you know, our communities in order, it lets off, you know, elected officials who know that there's other funds that could actually, you know, do the work to properly fund schools in communities such as Austin. And that stuff is just not getting done, right? And so I do think, you know, reallocating funds for sure can go towards this. But, you know, we just have to move our elected officials to be more, you know, if this was happening in Naperville and not Chicago, somehow there would be money to fix the problem, right? And so
because Naperville is, I'm assuming, a wealthy suburb?
Yeah, it's an affluent, you know, mostly white community, right? And so the reality is when, you know, anywhere in the country where, you know, pandemics or epidemics are hitting, you know, non-African-American communities, resources somehow are found and are brought into those communities. And the reality is, like, the Black community is under siege, right? So when people talk about "I can't breathe," it's not necessarily just a, you know, a tag word that, you know, victims of police violence have used, but the reality is, like, we need the government to support us and not feel like we're always having, you know, their foot on our necks.
Do you, I mean, what do you think would happen if Trump did go ahead and send, and it's still up in the air if it's going to happen, but if he did go ahead and send 150 federal officers from Homeland Security to Chicago, what do you think would happen, judging by what they've been doing in Portland? I mean, these are mostly men dressed in military-style fatigues, even though their normal DHS uniform isn't that, but they've deliberately dressed up in Portland in a way that makes them appear to be a, you know, members of the U.S. military. Some lawmakers have now called for them to stop wearing such fatigues, and instead others have even called for them to clearly identify themselves with their badge numbers and their agency name. But if these military fatigue-wearing federal officers were to come to Chicago fully armed and somehow stop violence, what do you think they would do and would happen in the city?
Well, the first part we want people to understand is suppression tactics to decrease violence have never worked. And while in the meantime, you're putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. So they may do it in the temporary, but it won't fix the overall problem because the problem is structural. The second part is I think we have an administration through our mayor who's prepared to challenge anybody who comes in and violates the rights of the citizens. She's spoken about that, and we're holding her to that. We believe that's a stance she will take. And then lastly, I think it's going to continue to just drive a wedge between law enforcement and communities where those fractured relationships exist. And it's just going to take more, you know, time in order for us to actually fix what's going on in our community. It's a huge distraction. I think the community and the country is facing COVID, which is the largest epidemic that the world has ever seen for anyone who's living now. And rather than deal with, you know, occurring events and real issues, you know, Trump has now found some red meat to make him look strong, right? The dictator component that he so loves. So I think it's a huge distraction, but all it does is create greater harm for communities in which we live.
He is characterizing himself as the law and order president, and it's not really clear what the goal is in sending these federal officers, because he has talked about addressing crime related to the anti-police protests, but then the shootings that have taken place in Chicago were completely unrelated to protests that were trying to hold police accountable. He has ignored the fact that guns are a part of the problem, and of course federal officers would simply be bringing more guns into the city. So it's really quite confusing, and I don't know if you've seen any of his latest re-election campaign ads, but he's basically characterized, you know, falsely claimed that Joe Biden is for defunding the police. And one of his new ads showed an elderly white woman watching a TV show where protesters were calling for the defunding of police while an intruder tries to enter her home. And she calls 911, but nobody answers because apparently the police have all been defunded, and even the emergency line now in Trump's dystopian world doesn't work. And you know, he claims that this is the future that Joe Biden is going to be bringing to America. Do you think that he is politicizing what Chicagoans and residents of other cities like Chicago are suffering through?
Absolutely. You know, Trump has a long history of hating Black and brown people, right? Down from, you know, the young men in New York who were exonerated when he called for the death penalty. He's quick for assumptions and slow to action.
And his niece just confirmed that he has casually used the N-word many times in his past.
Yeah, I have no doubt about that. What we're not seeing from this president, while he is hard on Black and brown people, he's very soft on, you know, foreign governments who interfere in our election. He's very soft on governments who put bounties on the heads of military folks who are defending America. And so, like, I think he's, again, it's just, he doesn't know, he's an inept leader and doesn't know what to do. And so I think in any time, he goes for the low-hanging fruit. And unfortunately, that has been a punching bag theme, the African-American bodies that exist in America.
So what would you like to see happen in cities around the country. I'm wondering also if the approach that you take in Chicago, that you describe, this hyper-local approach that really addresses each instance of violence individually and offers much-needed resources, is that a model that you'd like to see replicated in cities around the country? Because we are, unfortunately, during this lockdown, we are seeing an increase in crime, not necessarily violent, homicidal, gun-related crimes, but there are other crimes that are spiking in cities for various reasons that may be related to frustration or mental health or unemployment and poverty. But, you know, can this be a model for other cities?
Yeah, I think one of the, you know, if I had a wish list, I think it would be first one that we're allowed to do what we're doing today to really get the word out. As violence is spiking, you're right, New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta, everywhere is kind of going up, right? Because people are anxious. People are, you know, unemployed. We're in, you know, none of us have ever been in a situation like this. And for people who are already struggling with coping mechanisms for violence and other things, this is not a good time. And we're seeing that. And I think that, you know, getting the word out, letting people know in Chicago, you know, one of my wish lists would be like, if everyone knew about the work that the Institute for Nonviolence was doing, for instance, because a lot of people want to see the violence end, but they still don't know what is happening. And all they knew now is that the Chicago Police Department exists, for instance, but they don't know about, you know, 15 organizations that are covering 85% of violent neighborhoods and doing work. They don't know, like, you know, without those organizations such as the Institute for Nonviolence, what would violence be now? And I think there's a lot of good work that's happening, but again, it falls short because of like messaging, but also the resources. For as long as, you know, young men, you know, at the age of 17 can't get a job at 40 because of a past felony record, for as long as people can't get employed after coming home from prison, or there's no, you know, people who live in Austin send their kids to Austin public schools, but people are not volunteering outside of Austin to send their children to Austin some public schools. You know why? Because they're not properly funded. You know, teachers are buying toilet paper and school supplies. We're in Lincoln Park, neighboring neighborhoods that are affluent and well-to-do. They have more than enough. They have computer labs, right? And so, you know, we know, you know, that development area for the young people is not exist. It doesn't exist in places that we work and live. And for as long as that is happening, right, we're going to continue to get the same results. And locking people up again is not the answer. Hasn't been.
Chris, give out the website for your organization.
Yeah, so we're at nonviolencechicago.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Chris Patterson, Senior Director of Program and Policy at the Institute for Nonviolence Chicago. We've been discussing, among other things, Trump's plan to send federal officers there. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.